Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
We're so glad you've tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine. Of course, it's Memorial Day weekend. We just want to wish you all the best this weekend. We've actually recorded the show in advance. We hope you're enjoying it, and we'll be back live with you next week.
And we're back, everybody. It's nice of you to hung around during those long commercials.
I guess it's not nice to say hang around.
Well, you know how it is. Anyway,
some of the commercials are actually fun. Sometimes people just hang around for the commercials.
But I somehow I have difficulty, thinking of people dancing during the commercial break. But
we'll see.
We dance as we come in sometimes, but yep. That's about all of that.
Yeah,
we've got a little bit something different for everybody right now. If you recall, a few months ago, we did a gallery test.
Yes.
Which is a neat test. It is a blood test that basically screens for 50 different cancers.
Yeah.
And we had about 50 people come and do it.
That's right.
So that was really kind of neat.
That's right. And again, it's for our longevity clinic patients have had access to this test for over a year.
Yes.
However, being that cancer is so prevalent and so common and early detection can change the trajectory of a patient's life, we offered it to people that are not longevity patients. Mm-hmm. And we had over 50 people call in, make appointments, come in and have the blood test done.
Yes. Yeah, so we were really delighted with that response. So we're going to do it again, kind of. So what we're going to do.
With a twist.
With a twist. Let's do the twist.
Yeah. Twisting over there for them, Jerry. You will be on the radio show.
That's right. I'll be on the radio show that day. Anyway, June 24th.
Saturday morning, okay. June 24th.
So Saturday morning, June 24th, we are going to offer the gallery test again. And it is still $12.95. That is a screen for 50 different cancers, which works out to only $25 per cancer, mm-hmm. which is a pretty good bargain.
$25
for each cancer screen we're looking at. But we're also decided we're going to throw a little extra in here. You can get just the gallery tests for $1,250.
$1,250.
But if you are not a patient and you are one of these folks that say, you know what, I'd kind of like to get that fancy test that they do with all the lab work and the hormones, the inflammation, etc. If you do the gallery test and you want to, in addition, get the laboratory work, we're going to throw that in for
$245.
Unheard of. We normally do it for $600, $595.
Don't tell the CFO.
That's right. Normally that test is $595. That's $2,000 worth of lab work, by the way.
Yeah.
If you went to the lab, go over to LabCorp and say, here's a list of tests I want, and you put all of our tests on it, it's about $2,400 and some odd, okay? We get it for our patients for $595. If you're doing it in conjunction with the gallery test, we'll do the two tests together for $1,500.
Yeah.
So it's so you're doing the gallery for $1,250.
Yeah.
And for then another
$245. So $1,495, yeah, basically.
You end up $1,500. You end up with another $2,400 in tests.
Right. So, exactly. And it buys you and also 1 hour with one of our doctors, mm-hmm, who will then review all your labs with you. And again, at that time, you still don't have to commit to being a patient if you don't want to.
No. But that way you get to see what people would get if they came in for the health analysis appointment.
That's right.
They get that full great big panel, the giant one, in addition to the gallery test.
Right. And for our other health analysis patients, you know, we do some extra specialty tests, which we will not do for this particular offer.
Right. No. This is what you just heard about is what you get.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
The $595 test that we normally do plus the gallery test, $1,495, or you can get the gallery test by its own for $1,495 or for $1,250.
Yeah. And again, it'll be in the Kirkland Clinic only, mm-hmm, and on June 24th, 9 o'clock in the morning, we do request an appointment, and we will call you back to confirm it. But you can call our clinic to make a reservation and to block your seat because it'll be a limited spacing only.
Yeah.
And the number to call would be 866-86-YOUNG or 866-869-6864.
Okay. You want to repeat that for them again? Just
I think that's a great idea. I probably should. 866-86-YOUNG or 866-869-6864. So that's the number to call if you are at all interested on June 24th for the special promotion that Longevity is hosting for non-patients for the gallery test. And if you want a longevity panel for a discounted price of $245, the total will cost $1,495. And then you'll spend 1 hour with one of our doctors and go over all your results.
Okay. Well, that's all good stuff. So,
and the reason we're doing it is because, you know, the gallery test is a new test. It's built its reputation. It's an early detection of cancer, of 50 different types of cancer. And there is really no other screening that'll do that. I know we do a PSA for prostate cancer. We do mammography for breast cancer. And you still need those, but there is no other screening that is a blood test that is done routinely for patients.
Precisely.
And some people have family history and they're worried.
If you have a family history or even a personal history, if you've had a cancer
and
you've been told you're cured, this may well pick up a reoccurrence a lot earlier than you otherwise would get checked. So a good idea. Anybody high risk of any cancer, come on in and let us at least screen you for these 50 of them.
That's right.
Okay. So Ozempic.
Ah, the semaglutides. Actually, Jerry, it's a very good topic because, you know, everybody wants to lose weight. Everybody's trying to struggle with how to do it. And the media, social media, some people of influence, especially actors, they've popularized this not easy all the time, mm-hmm, but almost certain way of weight loss.
Well, and it is almost certain.
Right, exactly. I mean,
anybody that can tolerate the side effects is going to lose weight.
Right.
Because it is a shot, a little subcutaneous shot you take
injection
once a week.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, stick yourself in the thigh or the tummy, and almost everybody will lose a significant amount of weight with it. The appetite tends to go down. People don't want to eat. You actually lose your appetite significantly,
right,
which is a big help. Problem is some people also get really nauseated and do a lot of vomiting, and mm-hmm, other people, you know, get intense abdominal cramps and pain. So
they do.
So although I don't want to scare everybody, because some people get virtually no side effects.
Mm-hmm.
Some people feel fine. They just lose their appetite and lose their weight.
Yeah.
You know, and others have mild side effects that are just a bit of a nuisance, and some percentage, though, have these awful things and can't tolerate it. The question is, what do you do after you've lost the weight?
Yeah.
You know, typically with traditional diets, When people lose weight, 97% of them regain the weight within 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So only 3% keep the weight off for a full year.
Right.
With this drug, the same process is in play. When you lose your weight, if you stop taking the drug, virtually everybody will regain most of the weight,
right.
and a significant number will regain all of the weight. Again, 3 or 4% won't. So then the question is, you know, once you've lost your weight, you're down where you want to be, what do you do next? Well, there's two choices. Okay, one is a more traditional dietary intervention where you're being careful about what you eat and have people checking on you frequently and watching your scale regularly and never letting it creep back up. Or the other one is to go back on the Ozempic intermittently, the semaglutide, just maybe 1 or 2 weeks out of the month.
Yeah, that's right. And people do that. They inject themselves every other week with a low maintenance dose. Remember, there's an expense with the drug.
Oh, yes. Well, it's about $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
And so at $1,000 a month, if you're taking it 1 week out of each month, you're at $250 a month.
Mm.
You know, but if you've lost 50 or 60 pounds, it might be worth $250 a month to keep it.
Sure,
gone.
Sure.
You know, you spend $1,000 a month getting it gone, and then mm-hmm. once it's gone, maybe $250
yeah.
long term to keep it. Or, you know, every other month for a week or so. It all depends on how well you respond and how well you can control your diet
mm-hmm.
in between the sessions with the drug.
Mm-hmm.
So Ozempic is a decent choice for some people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we may be able to get some in for our patients at a significantly lower cost. You know, we've had offers from a compounding pharmacy out of state that does injectables, and they tell us they can get it to us a whole lot cheaper for our patients. But I also understand there's some reliability of supply.
Supply, yeah. Yeah.
And they, you know, they tell us that we could buy up to 80 vials. Okay. But if somebody is going to be on it for, say, a year, that's 12 vials per person. That means you've only got about 7 or 8 people you could put on it for 80 vials.
Mm-hmm.
So something we're looking at for our patients, at least, that we might be able to save them some money. Now, obviously, if you're diabetic or pre-diabetic, maybe your insurance company
yeah.
will cover it for you and you don't have to. But we might be able to find a compounded version for our people hopefully significantly less than that.
Yeah, and that's the advantage of compounding. Although with this, we're really not certain right now. We're just waiting to see if it is feasible
or not. It's
the
reliability.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, we know it's feasible. We know what the pricing would be for us.
And we know it's available, but is it really reliable? You're absolutely right,
yeah.
Jerry. We don't want to do anything that we know is, you know, just somebody trying to make a quick buck.
Well, and I don't want the patient on it. Say they've got they have enough weight to lose. They're going to need to be on it 6 or 8 months, and we can only get them a 3-month supply. That would be
yeah.
very unhappy.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, especially where, you know, we've said this before, weight loss is maybe like hypertension and should be treated like it for the long haul. It's not a short fix with the drug.
That's right. Anyway, I think it's almost time for us to take our next break.
Oh, already? Wow.
Zipping right by.
That was fast.
Okay. So we're going to take a break, listen to our fabulous commercials, and you know, patronize all the people that keep us on the air. Yes. And if you've got a great imagination and hear some wonderful music, go ahead and dance, because dancing is always good.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll talk to you on the other side of the commercial, folks.
Glad you're here on this Memorial Day weekend. Thank you for tuning in. Just a reminder, we're recorded this week, but we'll be live again next weekend.
Well, welcome back, everybody. And here we are once more for another segment. I saw a great, I don't know if I should call it great. I saw a worrisome article in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, this week. They said that among the JAMA physicians, only 57% would choose medicine again if they had a choice.
Oh, interesting. So doctors who were asked if they were able to redo life, would they choose medicine again?
And about half said no.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Which is kind of scary. And, you know, I saw one a year or two ago that was saying that only among doctors' children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only one in five decide to go into medicine.
Right.
And you know, I had nine kids.
Yeah.
None of them did medicine.
Yeah, none of mine too. No. And that's actually very interesting because a lot of times our friends' kids will reach out to us to ask about medicine, but our kids didn't do medicine.
Oh, and our kids, I mean, my kids looked at my lifestyle as a country doctor
right.
and said, I don't want to do that. I want to go home at night.
I know. No, and it's also once you achieve your degree, but there's such a long road to get to that place that, you know, you basically spend half your life studying. Because
yes.
it's school, then in college, then undergrad, then med school, then internship, and then some form of residency. And here you are, 35, 40 years old before you start bringing a paycheck home.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you have to do continuing medical education, and it just never stops.
And if you've gone to $300,000
in debt, yeah.
And that debt is piling up,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and the interest is piling up all those years.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a pretty daunting situation.
Indeed it is. I completely agree. And in this day, especially in our area where technology is so prevalent, young kids can get a job right out of college mm-hmm. and they can earn a good income.
You know, if you're a kid with a real techie coding ability,
yeah.
you can start off at $200,000 a year.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, you know, and with no college.
And that shocked me. You're stating a number that I didn't know, but even half of that shocked me when I heard it.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to me.
Well, yeah. For instance, my company president.
Yeah.
He delved deeply into coding and so on and was getting ready to – He went over to the University of Washington and he started a class, thought he would do a degree. But because he's a very smart guy,
yeah.
the first year the instructors told him, said, we don't have anything to teach you.
Yeah.
You already know what we would teach.
Interesting.
So he quit.
Wow.
And he went out and he started his own .com.
Okay.
And in 3 years, he sold it. It went public.
Yeah.
And he made umpteen million dollars,
sure.
more than I've ever seen in my lifetime. And he played a few years, got hired by another company because of his skill set. He grew that one up to the point he got bought out and taken public. And then he did a third time. And, you know, so now I've hired him to be my company president. We'll see where it takes us. But
when are you making me partner?
You know, I mean, this is a man who never went to college, didn't get any school debt, and has made more money that I will earn in five lifetimes.
Yeah.
The fact is that, you know, if finances are your goal, medicine is the wrong way to get there.
Yeah, and that's what we've told a lot of people that we have met, that, you know, you have to have a passion for medicine, and it has to come, it has to be not the financial part. It has to be that you like the medical lifestyle, the medical aspect, helping. Because, you know, no matter how much money you make in IT, you will never have the satisfaction of curing somebody. That's
yes.
a totally different thing. And that's what keeps us in our field today. That personal interaction with a patient one-on-one mm-hmm. and having the satisfaction that you have actually changed a life.
Yes.
And that you cannot get no matter how much millions you earn.
That's true.
And that's why doctors are poor these days.
And that's why doctors are by nature nurturers. We want to nurture.
We want to help.
We want people to be better. Yeah, I mean, when I look back on my career, especially my first 22, 23 years as a country doctor.
Yeah.
You know, I delivered hundreds of babies,
yeah.
and I got to be the first human being other than mommy to touch this new person.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, as I delivered it through the birth canal,
right.
I held this child. I sucked out its nose and its mouth, and I sometimes had to slap it on the feet to get it crying and moving a little bit. But, you know, it was it's a brand new life, and I got to be the first person to greet it and welcome it to the world,
sure.
which is really rewarding.
Yeah, it is.
And then on the other end, I was sometimes the last person to usher someone out of this world. I have had patients who simply, they outlived most of their family.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came time for them to die, I was the one sitting at the bedside holding their hand or giving them a hug mm-hmm. and reassuring them that someone was there as they were leaving this world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've ushered them in, I've ushered them out.
Yeah.
I have taken care of whole families, you know, children, parents, grandparents, that whole spectrum of health and disease.
Right.
You know? And now, of course, in longevity, our goal is mostly towards that last half of life, but it's not... It's not what I did as a country doctor. It's not meeting them every time they had a new crisis and discovering they were going downhill over time and then finally ushering them out. Our job is to see them and make them better each time we see them.
Yeah.
Instead of that inevitable decline in longevity, we get to see people who are already a ways down the road, but then we arrest, we stop that decline, turn it around, and for some period of years, watch them get stronger and faster and leaner and smarter. Their brain starts working better again,
that's right.
You know?
Yeah.
And they tell us about the fact that, you know, their romantic life in their relationship is better than it has been for decades.
Yeah.
That is its own type of reward.
For sure it is, you know, for people who have had issues and now are reaching that phase in life where the doctors are saying, well, what do you expect? This is normal for your age.
Yeah.
They have really seen a change in their life and have not accepted, well, that as being normal and said, you know, hey, it can't be. There is more to it, and I want to be a part of that more. Because,
yeah.
Yes, people do live healthier and live longer if they take care of themselves. So what is it that I need to do to get there, to be a part of that?
But that's the goal. We are not living longer as a society.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we've lost almost 2 years of lifespan in America in the last 3 years. So Americans are dying younger now. Primarily because of depression, suicide, drug addiction, you know, fentanyl, the open borders. You know, I wish I could get the government to recognize America actually has borders and you should ask for permission to come in,
yes.
You know, like you did, like
yes.
My wife did.
That's right.
I mean,
yes. And waited our turn in line for several years before that permission was granted.
Yes. You know, and now you want to come to America, you don't ask the State Department. You hire the drug cartels and they'll bring you right in. You know? I mean, you realize that the drug cartels bring 5 people into America for every 1 person brought in by the State Department?
Oh, my gosh.
The last 2 years under the Biden administration, the drug cartels have brought in 5 times as many people to America as the State Department has. That's mind-boggling.
I know.
So is that our new State Department? Should we go, you know, ask El Chapo to take over in Washington, D.C.? He's in charge. You know. Oh, well. But... back to medicine.
That's what we do best.
That's right. Well, I digress a lot, too. My mind goes hither, it goes yon.
Well,
but at least I've still got a mind.
Well, yeah. No, so, you know, with what I'm seeing, Jerry, and I know that traditionally, you know, at our clinics, we see people who, you know, 40, 50 and older. And in fact, I have patients into their 90s who still want quality of life, and
yes.
I admire them for it. But what I'm seeing is that many of the 30-year-olds are asking that question, what do I need to do to stay healthy?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I slower than I was 5, 6 years ago?
In my 20s.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're recognizing that it starts earlier. You know, we're seeing colon cancer at screening starting now at 45 because it's happening a lot sooner than it used to be.
And it used to start at 50, but Now the official start point is 45, but the reality is we're seeing some colon cancer in people in their 30s and early 40s.
That's right.
That's the scary one.
It is scary. And so, you know, and with traditional medicine, with the insurance-based system, it lags behind what science is achieving. And so as people are learning and reading on social media, as things are being published, not just in medical journals, but in the Wall Street Journal before, or in the New York Times or wherever before it is being published, in the medical journals, people are saying, well, what can I do to be healthier? And so I do see a lot, especially in our area in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of young people asking, how can I exercise better? Mm-hmm. How can I build more muscle mass? What do I need to eat? And is this right for me? And so you and I have been talking about what we can do to help this younger age group.
And we are putting together a program at Longevity specifically for, you know, the saggy 25s and 30s. So, yeah. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I love the Methuselah Society's motto.
Yeah.
Of, you know, let's make 90 the new 60.
Yeah.
By 2030.
Yeah.
And, I was ruminating on that this very morning, in fact, as I had finished my little morning jaunt. I did my 3 miles and I had come into the office and I was just taking off my coat and it suddenly hit me. Okay. I'm turning 76 in August.
Uh-huh.
That is the age at which the average American is dying now.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, I'm running for miles and having a great time. And I'm saying, you know what? Making 90 the new 60 is probably not that unachievable. I think I've got a good shot at being still vigorous and active 15 years ago or 15 from years now. From now when I'll be 90.
Yeah.
Because I'm not slowing down.
Yeah, and you might, because I have patients that are 90 that are still very vigorous and active.
Yeah.
So, hey, I mean, I had a patient of mine who was moving out of state, still our patient, by the way, even though he's out of state. And he met with a financial planner and he was in his early 70s. And, you know, he said, boy, when the financial planner said to me, you have 4 more years to live, 4 more summers ahead of you, statistically speaking, he said it really hit home.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's older now. He's past that. He's still with us. He's still doing very well and comes in periodically to see me. And it's just fun to take care of him. But he's living his life.
Yes.
And does he have medical problems? Sure he does. So does everybody else.
Sure.
So do younger people.
That's right.
But he can overcome them and he can still enjoy life.
Yeah. So I guess the moral of this story is if you are over 20, and if you're listening to the show, I can pretty well guarantee you are, you know, you might consider using Longevity Medical Clinic to let us help you get stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier, and have a longer, more productive life.
And also our current patients, their kids, if they've been worried about their kids as they watch their kids, they may want their children. That's where I can see them. Our patients want us to see their children, their adult children.
All right. Well, young lady, I think we're about out of time for this break. We're going to have to take another one.
All right.
But anyway, thanks for listening. And by the way, we all know this is a pre-recorded show because it's a holiday and we are all off enjoying life with our families. I hope you enjoy the weekend with yours. But we now have some best of sort of recordings that we think were some pretty good ones that you might still enjoy listening to. But thank you for being with us thus far.
Just a reminder, happy Memorial Day weekend from all of us at Leading Edge Medicine. Okay, we've got Vicki talking about tendons and balance from Mercer Island.
And Vicki, we talked to Dr. Umat about your case as well as the other doctors. I visited with Brandon Lee down at Compounded Pharmacy at And
yeah.
So yeah, I'm familiar with the efforts they're trying to make to help your hubby. For the rest of the listeners, this is a gentleman who has to have some surgery. He's elderly, in his 80s. He wants to do senescent cell therapy. He wants to lower his senescent cell load so that he will heal and repair better before surgery. But
he's only 69.
Oh, 69. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But, well, hopefully we're going to take care of him until he is 85. How about that?
Yes, we will.
But he doesn't tolerate the primary drug we use for senescent cell therapy. Gives him terrible, severe headaches and so on. Mm. So we decided that the standard dose is 100 milligrams once a day for 3 days, each week for 3 weeks. So a total of nine therapy days in a 21-day period. But he didn't tolerate the 100, so we said, well, what about 50s? Apparently he doesn't tolerate that. So Brandon went ahead and made him some 25s on the chance he might not do the 50s. Have you tried the 25s yet?
Yeah, we did 5 days of 25s. You can tolerate that.
Good. All right.
So we tried a 6 day, and the 6 day he got those symptoms back again, okay, with a terrible headache, can't think. So I think 5 days is the max.
Yep.
And, you know, we're not taking a break.
Yeah. And I'd give him, you know, a full week break. Normally we'd say 3 days on, 4 days off, three on, four. But with his sensitivity, I'd say the low dose for five and give him a full week, and then a low dose for five and give him a full week and a low dose for five.
That
will probably give him his best chance of lowering his senescent cell load. Won't lower it as well as the high dose would, but it's better than not doing anything.
Yeah, that's what we figured. You know, hopefully we're just trying to enhance the healing with the PRP or the stem cell. We're not sure which way we're going to go with that.
Sure. Well, or, you know, if they do stem cell, they usually do PRP with it. So you're going to do the PRP with or without the stem cells. So that's all right.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the possibility of rapamycin, is that still pending?
Yeah, that's on the table. You know, given his difficulty with the other problems, of course, I use both the senescent cell therapy and the rapamycin. Brandon has found a generic pill, a 2 milligram pill. And so, you know, talk to once more. Who's his doctor at Longevity?
Well, it was Dr. Umack, but now we have Dr. Pentland.
Okay. Well, yeah, Ken Pentland can do a fine job.
Oh, yeah.
Give him a call back and have him talk to me about the rapamycin. But what I'm leaning towards as a trial for him would be 4 milligrams once a week for a few weeks, and let's see what that'll do for him, okay?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay. So hopefully we'll get things cleaned up for him.
God, I hope the surgery is successful.
Somebody
was talking about a peptide. It's a peptide 157. That they have papers, research papers, showing that it actually enhances the healing of the Achilles tendon. Do you know anything about that? And would that be something we should do?
Well, here's the problem with the peptide 157 and many of the peptides out there is that they're being sold without any FDA approval. And so if the FDA has approved it for some use, then doctors can use it for other uses. Once it's approved for any use, doctors can use it for any other use. And so if 157 were approved for something, I'd say, yeah, we could try it for the tendon. But since it's not approved for anything, it's kind of being sold black market under the table right now. That worries me for the doctor, because the doctor that writes the prescription can be sanctioned by the medical board.
Yeah.
for using an unapproved drug.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I read the research.
It
sounds really good.
It does. It does. And in research animal, it works well. The question is when or if the FDA will get around to approving it. The problem is that these compounds, these peptides are very simple compounds. They're easy to make and they're cheap. And nobody has an incentive to put $150 million into the research to get it through the FDA. Because if you can't make a profit on it, why are you going to invest $150 million getting the government to say it's okay? That's the drawback. Cheap therapies are great for the patient, but we can't get them through the government because it costs too much. Once more, Ronald Reagan, government is not the solution to your problems. Government is your problem.
Okay, well, we'll go back to the rapamycin. Hopefully we can get on a trial for that before the surgery.
Rapamycin is an approved drug. You know, we use it off-label for different things, but there are many thousands of people using rapamycin around the country to enhance their aging and lower their senescent cell load. So it's a reasonable thing to try. Okay?
Yeah, hopefully we can try that. And I send my condolences about Jerry Berg. I really, really liked listening to him. He kind of carried everybody for a long time.
He did. Jerry was a sweetheart, and I've known him since the mid-1990s. And as I have said, he lived a good life. And fortunately, hospice gave him a peaceful death. Mm. And so
you
can't ask for a lot more than a good life and a peaceful death.
Yeah, well, we'll miss him, and I'm sorry to hear that, but life goes on.
It does indeed. Mm. And we all get our turn. I'm just planning to put mine off for a while.
Okay. He keeps postponing it.
Thank you for your help. And we'll be looking forward to the trial. Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, thank you, Vicki, for
There's a country music song. I've been listening to a lot of country music lately for some reason. And there's one called Prop me up next to the jukebox if I die.
Yes.
And he says, he's singing, I want to go to heaven, but I don't want to go tonight.
I remember that one.
Have a nice day, Vicki. Bye-bye.
Vicki, thank you so much for your call. Let's talk with Mary from Sammamish. Get her question. Hi, Mary.
Hello, Mary. How can we help?
Hello. Hi, doctor. My husband had a stroke in right on New Year's, he has left side paralysis, and he's improving somewhat. I've been looking for ways to help him, and I ran across this procedure done in Australia, in which they inject etanercept, which was previously Enbrel. Perispinal in the cervical area.
Hold on. We've got a commercial coming in that we can't stop. We're 1 minute out. But I tell you what, we will discuss this at some length. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on with stroke therapies right now. So 3 months up the road, it's about time to get busy on him because we want to make him better.
Yes, we do. Tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine. Of course, it's Memorial Day weekend. We just want to wish you all the best this weekend. We've actually recorded the show in advance. We hope you're enjoying it, and we'll be back live with you next week. Mary from Sammamish on the line talking about stroke therapies.
Etanercept, this is a fascinating situation when the court system and pharmaceutical companies get involved in a therapy. Generally, If a drug has been approved by the FDA for any cause, physicians are allowed to use it for virtually anything, because the drug approval doesn't say that a drug is now legal. What it says is the drug can now be marketed by the pharmaceutical company for this reason. So it's a marketing decision by the government. It's not a use decision, which I think people often lose track of. Etanercept is used in autoimmune diseases and some other problems, but back about 3 or 4 years ago, about 2019, the first cases were done. Somebody came up with a bright idea that TNF-alpha, which is a inflammatory cytokine, is overproduced in the brain in people that have had a stroke, because a stroke has killed part of their brain, and that dead tissue in the brain is actually resulting in an inflammatory process that infects the whole brain. It's like if you kill part of the muscle in your biceps, the whole biceps is going to be inflamed and irritated. Mm. You kill part of your brain, the whole brain gets inflamed and irritated. He says, what happens if we use something that is a TNF-alpha inhibitor in people that have had strokes? And by putting it into the paraspinal fluid, or actually some cases right into the spinal fluid, with the patient laying down, and then you put them in the Trendelenburg position, that is, you put their head lower than the feet. So the feet are higher than the head, about a 16-degree angle. The drug tends to flow down and into the brain through the blood-brain barrier. And amazingly, people that had significant central pain, because some people with strokes, you kill part of the brain, but they feel pain out in their external body, out in their hand or their arm or their foot. The pain goes away within about 10 minutes. I mean, it's very, very rapid response. And mood tends to improve. In some people, cognition improves. In some people, they're starting to get some motion back into the areas that have previously been paralyzed. Not a cure. You haven't fixed that dead piece of brain, but the rest of the brain is able to function better and help compensate. And they're getting improvement up to 3 years after the injury. So, I mean, even people that have stroked 3 years ago are often getting some improvement with this. Now, oddly, and for reasons I do not understand, one of the drug companies that made this and one of their employees filed a lawsuit in California trying to prevent doctors from using this drug for stroke patients. And the court said, no, we won't stop it. So it has now been fought in court. Neurologists can use it. For some strange reason, some folks still disapprove of it. I guess because, you know, anytime you're injecting stuff into the spine and you're putting it up into the brain, okay, yeah. But this has now been done for 4 years with a fair number of patients and generally significant improvement in a whole lot of them. And if I had a stroke, I'd want it.
Yes. Yeah.
So anyway, you got my opinion now, Vic.
So that was my question. How can we have that done?
You have to find a neurologist, someone with expertise with doing, you know, central nervous system injections. But a neurosurgeon would be certainly expert at this, and most neurologists probably. But I can guarantee you a neurosurgeon would be probably the most comfortable person on the planet for injecting stuff, since he actually opens your head and works on the brain directly.
Yes, let's have him do it.
Giving you an injection. Yeah, giving you an injection in the cervical spine would be, you know, piddly for him compared to what he does on his workaday work.
They said it also has been helping with Alzheimer's and even long COVID brain fog.
Yes, anything that involves inflammation in the brain seems to be helped in a significant number. Not in everybody. You know, nothing done to or by human beings is perfect, and nothing works all the time. But in most people, in the majority of people, they're getting improvement with any inflammatory brain process.
Have you heard of it being done anywhere in the United States?
Yes, I actually have.
Good.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody personally that is doing it, but I have certainly read papers in which researchers are doing it in the United States, and they're doing case reports.
Okay.
So there are doctors that will do it. It's just a matter of finding someone that is familiar enough with the literature and is willing to brook the disapproval of some of their colleagues.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Mixon.
You're welcome, ma'am. And if you find them, let me know, because I can probably refer that person a whole lot of patients.
Okay. Yes.
Aw, thank you so much for your call, Mary.
Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye, dear.
Yep. We wish you the best on that. All right. Headed north now, Dr. Mixon. We have Tracy from Everett on the line. Hi there, Tracy.
Hello, Tracy.
Hi, Dr. Mixon. I have a question. I wonder if you can provide an update on the efforts to ban bioidentical hormones. I heard from my naturopath that it looks like it might go through, but I don't know. I wondered if you might know.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it'll go through or not. The FDA wants to control everything. Mm-hmm. They're government. And to govern means to control. That's what government is. Government is an institution designed to control behavior. And a government organization such as the Food and Drug Administration, they want to control all the drugs. Mm. Hell, they want to control all the supplements. They want you to have a prescription, you know, for a supplement. Vitamin C might now
vitamin D.
Cost you, you know, $400 a month from the pharmaceutical company. It's a constant fight. They have been trying to close down compounding pharmacies for decades. They've been trying to get rid of bioidentical hormones. They've been trying to get rid of or at least get control over supplement manufacturing and prescribing.
Okay. Well, it was one of the few issues I feel really strongly about, and I even mm-hmm. wrote to one of the legislators to give my opinion on it. And
we'll do it.
I guess we wait and see.
Yeah, this is up to the members of the House and the Senate, you know. And unfortunately, as a group, Republicans tend to believe that people should run their own lives and that government is generally a detriment to that. And Democrats generally believe that government is a force for good and will help people to be safer if the government regulates what you do and don't do. Mm. And, you know, it's a philosophical difference of people who believe that individuals are simply not competent to make their own decisions versus those who believe that individuals should run their own lives and the central government should not.
Right. You know. Thank you. Thank you so much for your information.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Tracy. So this has been fought for years, and like you said, decades.
Yeah. And generally, the Democrats in Congress want it, mm-hmm. Want the control to be established, and the Republicans are generally the ones who obstruct it. And, you know, in this case, I'm on the Republican side, although my general political philosophy is as follows, and I'll state it again, you know. The left wants to run my life one way. The right wants to run my life a different way. What left and right seem to have in common is a belief that they can run my life better than I can. And I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that people who want to run their own lives stay home and do so. And people who want to run other people's lives seek public office. And so, you know, So I am somewhat distrustful of all politicians, mm-hmm. of all parties, of all persuasions, because if they were content to stay home and run their own life, they wouldn't be in office.
There you go. Yes.
So
we just hope. And now is this going up for a vote very soon? Do we know this, or is it just a constant battle that we have to deal with?
And it flares and it goes down and it flares and goes down. And generally, the majority of the votes in favor of government control are on the Democratic side of the aisle, and the general, the rule against are on the Republican side of the aisle. So in this case, I come down on the Republican side simply because I don't want the government controlling any more than they already control.
Absolutely. We're so glad you're here on this Memorial Day weekend. Thank you for tuning in. Just a reminder, we're recorded this week, but we'll be live again next weekend.